This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Deluxe Edition. I'm your host, Casey Shearer. Joining me, as always, L. Ray Sexton.
What's going on, Casey?
Not too much, buddy. How are you?
Oh, we're having a great day today.
Yeah,
you know why we're having a great day, Casey?
I do, yeah. Why don't you tell everyone why?
Because we just talked to Pete Wilcox, and he is a professional Elvis impersonator.
Yes, he is TV's Elvis. Mm-hmm. He was considered TV's Elvis in the, I'd say, 80s and 90s, right?
Yeah, that's a good guess, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Pete was in, if you saw Elvis on TV in like a sitcom in the 80s or 90s, it was most likely Pete Wilcox. He was in shows like Alf, Murphy Brown.
Cheers.
Tons of shows, so many shows.
Did the voice in Happy Days?
Yes, yeah. So many fucking interesting stories. The first time I contacted Pete, he was like, "I hope I'm interesting enough." And he, I'll just tell you this: he opens with a story about meeting Walt Disney, like the Walt Disney. So he's a pretty interesting fellow.
Yeah, we could have, this interview could have been like 4 or 5 hours long. Like, he has a lot of stories and we did not get to them all. So he will be back. So that's a cool thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And he doesn't live that far away either. So I might just take a ride down, see old Pete myself and interview him in person on my way to Tampa one of these times.
Nice.
So what do you say we get into it right after the house cleaning, right?
Let's do it.
All right, we are a part of the Deluxe Edition Network. You can find all of the other great shows over at deluxeeditionnetwork.com and the podcast.
Hold on there, Casey. So it's come to my attention that there's this thing called the Denny's, all right? And I don't know if you're aware, but Voice of the Year is kind of a big fucking deal now. And I need you to reread that with your best announcer voice.
I'm not an announcer. Am I up for consideration?
You are now because you're going to redo this with your best big radio voice.
Check out the other great shows on the Deluxe.
Come on, do better.
Do better.
Do better.
Check out the other great shows on the Deluxe Edition Network at deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
Oh, that was sexy. That was much better. All right, now you can do the rest any way you want. I don't care.
Should we talk about the Denny's a little bit before we get into it?
Do you want to talk? All right, let's talk about the Denny's.
Yeah, let's talk about the Denny's. All right. So, September 21st, we will be all gathering in Temple, Pennsylvania, my old hometown, to record the Denny Awards. It is the second annual Deluxe Edition Network award show. So every show on the network, I think there's 34 shows now. I think 33 of them will be participating in the Denny's because we just added one. So I don't know if they qualify yet. But everybody picks a category. This year we have added a few categories for the network themselves. And like Ray said, one of them is best voice on the network. We have Podcaster of the Year. We have Podcast of the Year, which is the Bev's Video Kingdom. They're the reigning and defending Podcast of the Year.
Yep.
What else? Oh, with editing. There's editing. So all these we'll have... The links and all that stuff will be up in the show notes coming up in the next couple months. You'll be able to vote on all these categories. So hopefully you got your nominees in by now. because the deadline was already. So,
well, all I will say is I hope I win for voice, because I think it's unfair that you have to sound like a 1950s radio announcer to win this award. I think that's unfair, but whatever, you know.
Well, I'll say this. I nominated you, I think.
Well, that would be stupid. I don't sound like a 1950s radio announcer. Why would you vote for me? What are you doing?
I didn't say vote.
You're wasting your vote. You're wasting your vote if you voted for me. This is ridiculous. I don't know what you're doing over there. But I want votes. I want votes. I think it's unfair that I can't win. That's ridiculous.
Well, do you know what it has now been decided that this is a new rule, and you'll have to remind me of this. Fans and people from our network wrote in nominees, right? So they're going to be who's on the ballot. But mm-hmm. I think there should be a write-in vote as well. You should be able to write in.
You just said that, though. You just said there's a write-in vote.
No, I said that everyone wrote in their vote. Everyone nominated.
Well, I didn't yet.
Well, you have a couple. By the time this episode comes out, deadline is over.
Ah, shit. I missed it.
All right, the podcasts of the month this month are Drink O'Clock Podcast, Quad Pro Quo, and the Steve and Crypto Show. Go check them out, deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
See, now you're getting it. That's how you get votes.
All right, go find our podcast over on Instagram at deluxeeditionpod. What do you do over on Instagram, Ray?
I post memes. That's what I do.
Oh, that's fucking funny.
All right, moving on.
All right, moving on. Go support our show, patreon.com/deluxeeditionpod. Get every episode unedited immediately after it's recorded. You can buy a t-shirt over at whatamaneuver.net/collection/deluxe-edition. And you can get one of these cool 10-cent beer night podcast shirts over at
TeePublic, 10-cent beer night podcast store. You can get that t-shirt. You can get a coffee mug with Evel Knievel jumping over kids. Like, I got all kinds of crazy shit over there. Just come buy something. You know, it's beer money. You get me my beer money. Let's go.
Yeah. As you'll find out in this episode, Ray's had a tough life, so go buy some t-shirts and help him with some beer money.
You know,
and
I'll tell you this, though. I only let the guests insult me like that. Don't you try it again.
No, I know. All right, I apologize, sir.
That's fine.
All right. Email. Yeah, I'm kidding. Go fuck yourself. Email us at deluxeeditionpod@gmail.com.
We would actually like to hear from you. Seriously, send us an email. Send us a message on Instagram or Facebook. We do want to know what you think of the show. Unless it's bad, then keep it to your fucking self.
Yeah, we do have feelings.
We got feelings and families and shit. For fuck's sake. Act like a human being. God damn.
All right, here is our conversation with the greatest Elvis impersonator of all time, Pete Wilcox.
Well, let me just play a little bit of it. Hang on, that's better. Go ahead. Are you hearing that?
Yep.
Some slide guitar, a little Memphis thing going on.
Yep.
Happens to be Elvis's favorite song, which makes it a pretty good song. Was his mom's favorite, too. Yeah. Wait. I got Buddy Holly glasses on. That's not good. We can't do that, though. I'm sorry. Elvis, come on. I was going to wear the Elvis glasses, but my wife said, no, no, it'll be you today. So
hey.
That's okay. I don't mind you keeping that. That's good. It shows everybody what a jerk I am. But we'll do it again.
By the way, your hair still looks fucking amazing, by the way, even with the headphones on.
God bless you. I owe you money for that. But here we go. All right. The Memphis Fly Guitar, Elvis's mom's favorite song. And I have to admit, I got a great question for you about this record after the song. Are we ready? Yes, we are. Well, then let's do it. Wait, I gotta do hair like this. Wait. Is that better? That's better. You can come around and eat Britain, Jennifer. No, be cruel. Do a hardness. Baby, for me, you made a song for my sin. Please forgive my past. Do you so bad hair? No, be cruel. Do a hardness. I want no love. Maybe it's to you love. Don't stop saying you love me. Hope you made me feel this way. Come on over here and love me. You know I want you to say. No, because do what I see. Why should we be apart? I really love you, baby. Smile. Don't be cruel to a hundred sheep. Don't be cruel to a hundred sheep. I don't want no one love. Maybe it's you love.
All right. All right.
Very okay. Nice.
Thank you very much. God bless you. Oh, well, we're going to get out of this. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, great. Okay, let me kill this. Okay, no feedback?
Yep.
Now, God bless. First of all, thank you so much for including me in your program. It's so kind of you.
Thank you, man.
I appreciate the chance to talk to people and get my story out and share it with you. And you guys, congratulate anybody working a podcast. God bless them.
Yeah, hey, it ain't easy. The pipes are still good, man.
Oh,
you sound good.
Thank you. I've got some plans for a couple of shows that I'm trying to put together. We found one. I really like this idea. See if you like it. We found almost pristine tracks, Elvis, the original tracks. So I'm thinking a theatrical presentation. The stage is a studio with the hanging mic, you know what I mean? The classic mic. And say, ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to welcome you tonight to a fantasy that we're all going to participate in. What if some of the masters of Elvis's favorite songs were destroyed and we lost his voice? And we called him in tonight to do his favorite songs. Well, that's what we're going to do. Ladies and gentlemen, please say hi to Elvis. And then I'll walk out. I'll have to send you a picture of me like today with the white hair and a scarf. And it's really fun. It really, really is. So, you know, he'd talk to the audience, have fun with them, but it'll be like a recording studio, no band, just Elvis, the mic, one-on-one.
It's almost like the 68 comeback special kind of a thing. Where...
God bless you. It is in a way, but right. You know, it's funny. A lot of people, you know, and first of all, let me just say, I'm an old guy. My last birthday, 80.
Hey, so, you look good.
You look great, man.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. So there we have it. So what I'm trying to do, that allows me to do a what if Elvis was still with us. Yeah. And that's sort of... I don't usually do it anymore. When I first started, I started doing a thing. I called it An Evening with Elvis. And I talked just like him. And when my daddy and me, we did this. When I was a younger man, we did. And the audience hated it. They said, how dare you talk like Elvis? You're not Elvis. And it was like, you guys aren't getting it, are you? And they weren't. They wanted you in a third person. So I went there. My objective was to get in the movie. I gotta ask though,
did they not get it? Because when you started, it was like, what was it, 62-ish or whatever it was? Like, Elvis was still alive at that point when you first started doing the act, right?
When I did his voice, for Happy Days. When Fonzie hits a jukebox, which is a cute story, Fonzie hits a jukebox and Elvis sings Hound Dog, that's me, it's not Elvis. And Elvis heard it and said, no, wait a minute. Says, hey, man, I wonder if I'm getting paid for that. And Charlie Hodge says, no, that ain't you, boss. That's the kid. I met Elvis at Schwab's Drugstore, famous drugstore. And that's where Lana Turner was discovered. Oh, the great, had a counter and all kinds of actors would be sitting there. It was great, great fun. I was working in the club next door, and I had already, that's so funny. I got so many fun stories. I don't know how much time you got, you know what I mean? But
oh, we got all night, man.
Yeah, we got all night.
Let me tell you how it started. Oh, my God. Okay. I'm going to have some fun with you guys. It started January 30th, 1956. We used to play air guitar when I was a kid. We invented that. And the song that we invented air guitar on was Rock Around the Clock. And if you remember the solo, if you didn't, it went like this. Okay. Latin teacher walks out of class. I've always been class idiot, just my curse. I get up, I'm doing air guitar, and I used to kind of like do the jitterbug while I was doing it. And they said, oh, he's coming back. So I jump back in my seat, and the kid behind me, his name was Dave. I can't remember Dave or Donald. We'll call him Dave. Dave Howell says, who are you supposed to be, Elvis Presley? I said, who's Elvis Presley? He said, you didn't see the Tommy Jimmy Dorsey show? Oh, he was on, he was just on the Tommy Jimmy Dorsey show. I think Heartbreak Hotel was out, but it was his first TV appearance ever. So I said, no, I didn't. And then so life went on. Later that week, I saw a picture of him, the cover of the album where he's profile in real orange and green, pretty behind him. It says Elvis, And I'm a bastard. I look like him. I really look like him back then. I'll send you a picture of me younger. You'll get a kick. I'll send you a bunch of junk and you can put it in the trash can or put it on the air, whatever you want to do, man, it's your show. But, I looked at him, I said, my God, I do look like it. And he was wearing a shirt. My dad had a shirt just like it. Well, you know who got the shirt. That was the last time my dad ever saw that shirt. But I did. I kind of looked like him. And I always had a knack for impressions. Elvis came quick. I mean, the early Elvis, we could teach a monkey to do an early Elvis in a half an hour. You can't get a monkey to sing Hurt. That's a different ballgame. But Opie Krul and all sugar. The thing about it was, this is funny, I was talking to my wife about this. We went to Graceland, and in the overhead, they were playing Spanish Eyes, a beautiful song. And Elvis was singing, two Spanish eyes. Now you hear that vibrato I'm putting in there? I don't have that in my voice. And I said to her, if Elvis sang like that when he first came out, I wouldn't have liked him. What I wanted was, that's what I wanted to hear. You know what I mean? I had Perry Como. I wanted this other guy. Where the hell did he come from? You know what I mean? We just went nuts when we heard him as kids. You guys were, which one of you guys is older? Hold your hand up.
Oh, that'd be me.
I knew that would be you.
Oh, yeah, that's me.
Okay. And how old are you, sir?
I am 52 years old.
Oh, my God.
But I
had a rough life.
Look at him. Fuck yeah, I do. I got the TCB lightning bolt on the back of my leg, buddy. I've had a rough life.
You have. But God bless you. You're here and your spirit is wonderful. And it doesn't matter. You go right ahead and hit some more of that Corona and we're all rolling with him. Okay.
Yes, sir.
What was I getting at? Wait a minute. Where was I going with that?
So you were just saying Elvis. had something different than Perry Como.
Well, no, he did. You're right. And like it just tore us up. We were so full of energy that we loved him. But then he was on the Milton Berle show. And we didn't see the Milton Berle show because there was a Christian program at the time, Life is Worth Living, Bishop Fulton J. Sheen, and we watched that. And Elvis tore the world up. That's the night he did Hound Dog for the first time. You know, I mean, like, dear God, life wasn't the same. But then he was going to come on a Steve Allen show, and I said, we got to see him. And my mom and dad said, okay, all right, we'll see him. And actually, it's funny, Elvis hated that because they made him sing to that dog. And it's some of the most iconic, endearing pictures of Elvis holding that dog and singing to him, you know what I mean? So he sang, he did Hound Dog, and he did I Want You, I Need You, I Love You. And my dad and I fell absolutely in love with this guy. The next three things he did was Ed Sullivan, because he got the great, he beat Ed Sullivan in a rating. Only time Steve Allen beat Ed Sullivan in the ratings, he had Elvis on. And Ed Sullivan said, I'm not going to have him here on my show. He's degenerate. Then he beat him in a rating. Well, he's not so degenerate if he gets those kind of ratings. So he put him on, he loved Elvis. Elvis was a honey. Elvis wasn't degenerate. You know, honestly, he was full of life. And a lot of spirit, you know what I mean? They shouldn't have been Elvis the pelvis, it should have been Elvis the leg. It was the leg that was doing, not the pelvis. Right. And I've looked back, trust me, I've studied everything he did. Elvis wasn't vulgar on stage. He was energetic and full of life. He was almost like just dancing. But my dad and I just screamed, oh my God, we screamed. My dad loved him. And the minute the show was over, I ran upstairs and got the Vaseline out and did my hair, you know, I did. Couldn't get to it quick enough. And my dad is a very, very interesting guy. Too bad he's not here. You should be interviewing him instead of me, but that's okay. He's in heaven. He's in a better place than we are, so, you know, lucky for him. But my dad was a very interesting guy, too. I say too as though I'm interesting. I don't know how interesting I am, but he really was. He worked for a magazine called Parents Magazine. And he invented or put together rating movies because he thought it'd be a good idea for parents to know if their kids could go see a movie or not. And they said, well, that's a good idea, Phil. You'll be in charge of that department. So every year he would go to Hollywood and he would give medals of achievement, usually to people, younger people like Elizabeth Taylor or Mickey Rooney, Roddy McDowell. But he was also he really struck up a very decent friendship with Walt Disney. And as a matter of fact, when mom was giving birth to me, Walt said, let me know if it's a boy or a girl. And the dad calls it, it's a boy. His name is Peter Michael. And he sent me a still from Bambi. It was Stumper, Peter Michael, best wishes, Walt Disney. So sweet. While I'm on Walt, mom and I only went to California with him one time. I grew up in Connecticut, by the way, East Coast kid. And we went out and we met Walt Disney, and Walt was rather taken with me. I guess hyperactive kids is what we call them now. I was just crazy, but I was really just hyperactive. You know, I mean, the crazy was anyway. I just was bubbling, and Walt was kind of tickled by me. He says, "Who's your favorite character?" And I said, "Huey, Dewey, and Louie." And my dad says, "Who the hell are they?" And Walt says, no, that's good. He said, they're Donald's nephews. So he took me around the studio or whatever it was. I don't remember it, really, to tell you the truth. And when we were all done, he turns to my mom and says, I love this kid. Do you mind if I use him in movies? And my mom says, are your kids in movies? He said, oh, no. Oh, Gene, I shouldn't have said that, should I? And my mother comes up with the classic mother line. She said, well, I just want him to grow up normal. It didn't happen, Ma. I didn't grow up normal. You see what happened. And what really pisses me off is I could have been with Annette instead of Frankie Avalon. That could have been me. I would have been a mouseketeer. I'd been on a beach trying to get inside her bikini. Oh. Anyway.
I gotta stop you there. So when I first contacted you, you were like, man, I hope I'm gonna be interesting enough. We're 150 episodes in. None of our other guests have ever met Walt Disney.
Now they haven't.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Or Elvis Presley. I met Elvis. Come on.
Yeah. Now you're checking now off boxes.
Now you like me. Now I'm going to get a two-parter. This one and
Hey, I'll tell you.
We'll see how this one goes.
I'll tell you right now. The second I found out we were interviewing you, I was like, he's from fucking Dudes. He was.
Oh, God bless you. God bless you.
I love that movie. Your scene's fucking iconic in that movie.
Which one?
Dudes, where you're broke down on the side of the road.
That was so cute. Director was Penelope Spheres. I had a crush on her. She was just gorgeous. A little rock and roll babe from the word go. But she said to me, I wish I had met you earlier. I would have written your part in stronger. I helped the guys in the middle of the movie. And then I disappeared. She said, I'd have had you come back at the end and help them in trouble. I said, no, the movie belonged to the guys. You did the right thing, but I'm very flattered that you liked what I did. So, yeah, it was a fun movie. Danny Roebuck is, they're both great. Danny Roebuck, real sweet guy, though. And Johnny Cryer's had a wonderful career. So, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How did you end up in that movie, though?
They were looking for a guy to do Elvis, and at the moment, I was kind of the Elvis guy in L.A. That was very, very lucky. I was chosen to do a very silly sitcom called The Last Precinct. Stephen Cannell did it, and we had like eight episodes, and then it didn't make it. It didn't get picked up, which was a shame. They did not know what to do with my character. They wanted an Elvis guy, so I had to kind of come up with ideas for myself, and they kind of liked what I did. But, boy, if that had just clicked for one more season, I was going to go to Rhino Records and try to get an oldies album, you know, to really make the most of it. I originally, let me tell you how I got to do the voice of Elvis. I was working in North Hollywood at a jazz club called the Baked Potato. It was owned by a man named Don Randy. His son owns it now. Don was the piano player for the Wrecking Crew, the famous Hollywood session group that played for everybody. Don played for the Beach Boys, Elvis, Dean Martin, Nancy Sinatra, Boots Are Made for Walking. He's played on more records than any piano player in the history of rock. And I was very lucky. He was a very special friend of mine. He said, well, Pete, come on out and work with me. He said, when I first started, not first started out, but when I was in clubs in the beginning, I had two guys playing the breaks for me. One was Trini Lopez, and the other was Johnny Rivers. I said, wow, this sounded like a good shot. And it was for this one. First of all, just to be with Don all those years, he's absolutely my dearest friend. I had like three dearest friends. So there you go. He's one of the triumvirate. But anyway, he was having lunch one day with a kid named Ron Hicklin. Ron contracted all the voices for TV and film and stuff. And he said, Ronnie, what are you doing? He said, well, he said, I got a new TV show called Happy Days. He says, you've got everybody? He says, I can't find an Elvis guy. So Don just laughed, said, come on to the club tonight. So he came and said, Pete, do some Elvis with us. I said, all right. I mean, I didn't usually. Because I was trying to be a singer-songwriter in my own right. Elvis was my inspiration, no question. But like Bob Dylan, like John Lennon, it made me want to be like him, not him. There's a difference, you know what I mean? Use rock and roll as your tool, because I wanted to be in movies too. I wanted to be like D'Artagnan. My other favorite, who I'll send you a picture, was Errol Flynn. That's who I wanted to be, Errol Flynn. And well, when Elvis came along, it kind of made us all feel like, wait a minute, maybe this is the road in. You know what I mean? He did so well, and it came off music. And I did fairly decent impressions as a kid. I'll do a couple for you in a minute. But he was like falling off a log. A Dopey Crew, Hound Dog, All Shook Up, all that stuff. Oh, dear God. So much fun. And so I was taking acting class. I was working with Don, writing songs and trying to be James Taylor. And I would do an impression here and there. I'd throw Elvis in. And Hicklin gave me the job for Happy Days. Whenever Fonzie hits jukebox, and the big one is usually Hound Dog. That's me. And then they use it on Laverne and Shirley, too. I think the big one, there's a bachelor party, and he does Love Me Tender. But it was so iconic that got me going. And Elvis heard it once and said, I wonder if I'm getting paid for that. And Charlie said, no, that's that kid you met at Schwab's drugstore. And I'm going to give you another good Elvis one. Live from Memphis. The picture on the album is Graceland. And the last song Elvis always sings is Can't Help Falling in Love. Wise men say only fools rush in. Here's what he sang. 1974, Charlie had told him who I was. He'd already done that. Am I getting paid for that? On the record, and you can check it out, wise men say only fools. Okay, the bridge. Like a river flows, surely to the sea. Darling, so it goes. Some things, you know, Pete, are meant to be. On the record! Not Roy Orbison, not Bruce Springsteen, not John Lennon. Pete! And what the hell is that? And it was funny how I heard about it. A sweet girl used to come and see me. I think it was, I was in the backseat of the car, smoking some medicinal influence. And she played that. I nearly flew out the window. What? What? Did Elvis just say Pete? Let's play it again. Sure enough. I mean, I just, oh my God. So, you know, in the world of Elvis tribute artists, everybody is the ultimate Elvis. Everybody's won every contest. Everybody is the best ever. Elvis never mentioned them. I'm sorry, as Blake Shelton would say. Anyway, well, you know what's funny? It's all silly, but it makes for fun stories.
How did they get around that, though? How could they use your? How could they use you singing his song?
Well, he didn't write that song.
Sound alike.
Oh, he didn't.
No,
you were technically an actor doing a sound alike. Yeah, if they got him, they would have to pay maybe $100,000, and I got $150. So,
Gotcha. Oh, okay.
That's a little bit of an injustice there when you think about it. But I mean, if Elvis thought it was him, there ought to be an extra $150 in there for me somewhere. But there is. I'm on the show.
Before you hopped on, we were talking about that, about voiceover actors and stuff. Like, why do they hire actors to do commercials and stuff when you can't even see them? And it's like, because you can recognize their voice. And Ray said sometimes it's not even that. It's not even the actual actor. It's just someone that sounds like them.
Yeah. Rich Little did some wonderful work for actors that passed away. I think Jack Hawkins, the English actor, got throat cancer. And Rich had to go in and do some of his lines, and you can't tell. So it's an art form. It really is. Just kind of getting in the beat with the guy, and there you go. But I was studying acting with one of the finest acting teachers in the world. We could do a show on him. His name is Jack Garfine, and he was Auschwitz survivor. Came to New York after the war. It was taken under the wing of Lee Strasberg. And he came to L.A. and started Actor Studio West. And I was blessed to study with him. That man changed my life in just the interpretation, how to sing a song, how to play a part, how to communicate. He's absolutely brilliant. I was very blessed to have him in my life. He probably had more impact on me than anybody but my dad, because he really helped me think, help me learn to communicate, try to write. He came and saw a show once, and he said, I was doing memories pressed between the pages of my mind. The park goes, quiet thoughts come floating down. They settle softly to the ground like golden autumn leaves. I touched them and they burst into sweet memory. He says, Pete, see the leaves coming down. Touch one and see your mom's face. Touch one and see your first girlfriend. Touch one and see where you used to live. And when you do that, what happens is you have an inner communication, an inner contact with that memory. You have an inner connection with that thought, and you have an experience. If I have an experience, you have one watching me. And that's how a singer, Frank Sinatra, believe me, he was having connections with the images of those amazing songs. Elvis had it instinctively. There was an instinctive interpretation on Elvis is kind of hard to describe. Magical, it's kind of what made him who he was. And when we were kids, like I said, we had never heard a white man sing with that kind of energy. My baby's long and tall, be like a cannonball. Well, you never heard a white kid singing like that, you know? And it was exciting to us, and we wanted to be a part of that expression. The key is, of course, to try to find your own way to do that. My wife complains. My wife, she got a cute Elvis story. She complains. She says, Pete, you could sound more like Elvis if you would try. I say, you know, it's funny. At my age, I've done that so much that I kind of want to slip me in there. I don't mind singing like him, but I don't want to sound just like him because you got him. You know what I mean? But I don't mind borrowing his style. Ella Fitzgerald was on a Tonight Show, and Johnny Carson said, Ella, you're the queen. You're the best. Everybody loves you. Who do you listen to? And she said, everybody. If I hear somebody do a good lick or good line, I steal it. And that's the key to it. And it's a sad sort of topic just kicked around. Elvis stole black music. No, he didn't. No more than Nat King Cole stole white music. The singers, these are the songs. They have a certain style. Guys above, an old black brother sitting on a back porch singing the blues. Well, he's going to deliver that a different way. And when you hear it, you're going to go, man, I like that. I kind of like to sing. So you sing like it. You don't copy him. You're influenced by him. And Elvis grew up in the black ghetto in Tupelo, Mississippi, on the wrong side of railroad tracks. So guess what he was listening to? You know what I mean? And yeah. The black people that they say he was the sweetest, most mannered kid. Call him yes, sir, no, you know, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. Their own kids didn't teach, you know, weren't that polite. Gladys held a, you know, little whipping stick on Elvis, kept him in line, made a real well-mannered boy out of him. What the hell are we talking about? I strayed, man. I'm sorry, I do that.
Yeah, no, that's awesome, man. This is awesome. So you grew up in Connecticut. I know you lived in Harrisburg for a little while. Was that later in life that you lived in Harrisburg? Where? In Harrisburg.
Oh, yeah, that was really toward the very end. I was okay. I grew up in Connecticut. We moved to Florida for 1 year. I got in the Army. Out of the Army, got in bands, and traveled around the country. Settled in L.A. for 20 years, settled in Vegas for 20 years. I had like a year back and forth in Harrisburg. An ex-wife lived there, and we were trying to make it work, and it wasn't in cards for us. And then went back to Vegas, then I moved to Texas, moved to Florida, and I'll probably in the next year or two go to Austin. You never really know. At my stage of life, it doesn't matter, really. They're rooms, you know what I mean? If I got a decent meal, got a good friend, I'm with my wife, I'm happy. That's another whole story. Who you are at 80 and who you were at 30, dear God. They don't even seem like they're in the same universe. 50.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, you've performed everywhere, though, right? Like, I was watching the videos that from Chile and France and all over the place. Right. Why did you, like, you wanted to... Originally, when you started, you wanted to get into acting and get in, like, you were doing your own singer songwriter stuff. Was it just like more profitable to do the Elvis thing, or?
Well, yes. When he died, when I used to do Elvis at the Baked Potato, Don, the owner, and I, we used to laugh. I said, "Man, what the hell we got here?" I mean, grown people were standing screaming. This is like in 1972, and he said, "I don't know, man. You're really doing well." And some friends of mine worked at Columbia Records, and they said, Pete, you should be doing this in Vegas. What, are you crazy? Go see him. You know, I'm trying to write my own song. Shut up. Let me, you know, I was very blessed. As a matter of fact, Don Randy and I wrote a song for the movie Santee, Glenn Ford Western, and it was nominated for an Oscar. How about that? I mean, you know what it was, though? They had to have 10, and we were one of them. We didn't get in the top 5, but it's still kind of a nice little credit. It kind of proves that, yeah, you write a decent song and a show and things. You know what's funny? I wish that I had been more businesslike. I was more for the fun of it. I still remember when I was like 12 years old at my next door neighbor's house, we used to play hound dog. No, don't be, well, that's an interesting story. I have to come back to, we played Don't Be Cruel, All Shook Up, Shake, Rattle, and Roll by Bill Haley in the Commons, and a wonderful old instrumental called Honky Tonk by Bill Doggett. And I remember sitting in his room listening to Elvis and thinking, God, I'd give anything to be a part of this new music that we're hearing. And look how blessed I was. I got to do it for 50 years. Yeah. You know what I mean? I didn't have to work at Walmart or, you know, I was just so, my dream came true like that. I didn't get to be in movies. And yet, every night for about 30 years, I portrayed Elvis. That's a pretty good part to have. So yeah. It's funny. Your dreams come true in different ways. You just have to be fortunate enough to catch them and realize, oh, this part of my dream coming true here. I need to enjoy this. And I was very blessed that I did. I still do. I mean, it was fun doing that for you. It's fun. We're sitting here talking about it because that's what I did.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. You said, you keep saying about you wanted to get into movies. You were in, I mean, you were in Dudes. We talked about that. And you were in a ton of TV shows and stuff. Right?
Oh, yeah. My playful title is America's TV Elvis. I did Stephen Cannell. I did Elvis, a character in that. Then I did Cheers, Designing Women, Murphy Brown, L.A. Law, Full House. I mean, come on. I was the guy they called for those parts. Wow. And it's so amazing. When I look back and I see him, it put me into instant prayer just to be so grateful that God allowed me to experience those things. The challenges, of course, to try to keep making yourself relevant. At my age, as I've made an effort to try to get to festivals and things like that, and they don't want any part of me. They want the Elvis in a jumpsuit. We don't. Now, Elvis, you know, wasn't old, and we're keeping this alive. I said, well, okay, you know, I can't argue with them. That's their platform, and that's what they want to do. But to me, part of it would also be, wouldn't it be fun to see what he might be like if he was still here?
Yeah.
That's a decent tribute.
Me and Casey were just talking about that. Also, as I said, you know, the iconic is the jumpsuit, but you know, why aren't there more impersonators doing the other versions?
They do, but the
most popular one is the jumpsuit Elvis.
Absolutely, it's spectacular. It's bigger than life. I had a show. This is so funny. There's one of my favorite guys. I have several real wonderful guys, so I don't want to say my favorite, but a very talented kid doing Elvis is a young man named Dean Z. His home is Branson, Missouri, but he travels all over the world. He's very good. He does pink jacket, black leather, and jumpsuit. He changes. Well, in 1980, I played the Troubadour, which is a famous rock place in Hollywood, and I did pink jacket, black leather, jumpsuit, 1980. I did that 50 years ago, or 40 years ago, you know what I'm saying? So it was a good idea then, too, you know what I mean? And it's like, he does three costumes, you know? And I have to settle down and say, it's okay, because he's wonderful. I really like this kid. Very dedicated, very excellent work ethic. But now what I'm trying to do is be a reflective of the guy. I talk about myself like I'm a hamburger stand. So, I mean, it's kind of obnoxious to talk about yourself all the time. But people want to talk to me about what I've done. So, and my wife is trying very, very helpful to help me find a niche. So for us, I'll say income, and also there's some other things that I want to do with my life before I'm gone. And the reflection of Elvis, looking back on his whole career, just saying, I'm the guy that did his voice. And these are the things he did. And I slip in other impressions and all that. But, and I really, it's like, this idea came to me today. I really like the idea of a fantasy of, you know, One More Take, or, you know, Elvis, The Lost Tracks, whatever, but have the announcement come in Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our show tonight. As you know, I don't know if I should say we invite you into our fantasy. I don't know about that. Invite you into our dream. But what if the tracks, the vocals were lost on some of the tracks? And what if, because of today's technology, we could get such a close sound, almost like Elvis breathing on the mic? What if we could redo some of those vocals? Ladies and gentlemen, please say hello to Elvis. I'd come out, white hair. I was thinking maybe like a black suit, maybe a scarf, no jumpsuit. Still rock and roll, might take the jacket off, say, all right, you guys ready to get busy? I'd probably keep the glasses on. I wish I had the glasses tonight for you guys. Now, especially now we're doing this. But, okay, here's my buddy Holly glasses. Let's make believe these are the Elvis glasses. And I say, okay, wait a minute. I thought I might have had a set up here. No, I don't. Anyway, I'd probably keep them on because I wouldn't want to do something to break the illusion. Well, if I was doing myself, when I used to do Elvis, I'd do CC Rider and take them off during the solo because I didn't want to hide behind the glasses. You know what I mean? I wanted that eye contact. But I've just run into some karaoke tracks on Elvis. I swear to God, it dropped dead. It's like, oh my God, it sounds just like the record. Well, if I put enough echo on my voice, I sound a lot like Elvis. So having a guy do that, and if you could pull a character off, I think it might be a fun evening. You know what I mean? And yeah. It would be, I wouldn't want to be, these guys, they're charging $50, $60 a head to see them. No. I want to charge $20 tops. Come on, let's make it affordable. Let the guy running the place make a buck. I make a buck. And you can take your wife or your girlfriend out. And it's not going to cost you. To go out to parking, a drink, and two tickets. You could be looking at $100 just bang. And that's too much. You know, we're trying to keep doing what we do. And God's allowing me to play in the arena, you might say. So I'm very excited about what we might be up to. Very excited.
Awesome. So you mentioned doing other impressions. And some of the stuff I was watching online, how did you come up with like adding that into the act?
Well, the way I did it, it started actually. Well, I used to do people like John Wayne and Jimmy Stewart. You know, everybody did Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, everybody did Jimmy Stewart. Not everybody did Joe Pesci.
That's right. A lot of people don't do Robert De Niro very much anymore. Really, you know what I'm saying? Wow, that's amazing. You do all those voices. Wow. I can't imagine that. So it was a knack that I had. And the voices, I would say, you know, Elvis, I would do like two or three Elvis songs. Okay, well, anyway, everybody's going. So, you know, when Elvis first came to Vegas, that's not who they wanted. Our folks were here. They weren't Elvis fans yet. They liked other people, like Dean Martin. Everybody loves somebody sometime. I did Dean Martin in the Rat Pack. I listen, man, if you can dig it, I can actually get into a little Sammy Davis, man. Who can take a sunrise? Or if you can do Elvis, you can do Roy Orbison. You can do anybody can do Johnny Cash. You know what I mean? That's not fair. Johnny's got a distinctive tone and presence. But Johnny, Willie, Bob Dylan, Neil Diamond, these are different. Michael McDonald, Bill Medley. These are the different voices that I do. But I keep coming back to Elvis. It's like, I do it because I like it to do it. And also, what if somebody out there after five Elvis songs has had enough Elvis? Well, I want to keep him interested too. You know what I mean? Sure. And I want to keep you interested in me. That's what the entertainer wants to do, you know? So that's really kind of how I got into it and why I still do it, to tell you the truth. But I can remember, like, I was driving in a car by a park in North Hollywood. I remember right where it was. And the announcer said, ladies and gentlemen, the rumors you've heard that Elvis Presley is dead. And I was sure he was going to say are false. He didn't. He said, the rumors are true. Elvis dead at 42. I pulled the car over. I just kind of had to sit and collect myself. I had a beard at the time. I was like a Chris Christopherson looking kind of guy. because I want to kill the resemblance to Elvis. I mean, I wanted to get me out there. You know what I mean? And, oh, yeah, he thinks he's Elvis. And, you know, no. But then I thought, you know what? They're going to make a movie about him. They have to. I've studied acting for about 6 years with this amazing teacher. I've done his voice for television. This might be my spot. This might be my opportunity. Well, what's funny is I was up for or consideration for Dick Clark's movie, Elvis, that Kurt Russell did. And I was being managed by a man at the time who was trying to do a movie based on Ed Parker's book, Inside Elvis. Ed Parker was a father of American karate, one of Elvis's dear friends and karate teacher. And they didn't want me to get that part. So when a call came in for me, they said, well, he's up in Tahoe if you want to fly him down. And I said, oh, no, we're not flying anybody. We got 300 people here that want to do the part. But we've heard about Pete. We know he does the voice. So we thought you might want to send him in. That never happened. Well, about 2 years later, I was in a show, and Joyce Selznick, her dad was David O. Selznick, real big Hollywood name. Joyce was a casting director working for Dick Clark. She came in and saw the show. She said, okay, I have to tell you something. You're excellent. But I was managing Kurt Russell. I don't care if you came in spitting golden nickels, he had the part. So relax and move on. And I said, well, you're very kind to tell me that. I said, I have to tell you, I really enjoy doing what I'm doing. Every night I'm kind of portraying this guy, and I'm telling you, you put on the jumpsuit, the glasses, and hear the screams, it's not bad. It's very exciting. It's very, you're Santa Claus at the Christmas party. That's what it's like. And I loved him as a boy. He was my favorite. So I kind of relegated and kind of gave away my late 30s, 40s, and 50s to this project. And I don't regret it. Because I'm happy where my life is now and what I'm up to, that I'm trying to do some other, like just to sit and still have a dream of doing a production. That's excitement. That keeps us going. You always want to have a dream. You always want a carrot out there in front. You know what I mean? It keeps you relevant. It keeps you thinking. It keeps you trying. Yeah. And,
no, that's awesome. It's funny. So you said you studied Elvis, like, you know, everything, you know, to make sure that you got it right. How much of the lifestyle did you, were you partying as hard as Elvis was out on the road?
Now, what's funny, I mean, first of all, you're out in the road, you're doing Elvis, it's rock and roll, you know, the party is there. In fact, you're the ringleader at the party. But, Elvis had a different kind of partying. You don't hear him all over the place with all kinds of girls. There were three or four. If you stretch it out to maybe 10, you know there were more. Practically, he had more crazy life as a kid, as the rockabilly singer. Oh, my God. They said the back seat of the car was like a motel. But as a man, all the excitement and the hoopla was there in the show. And usually after the show, they had the famous gospel sessions. But he usually went home to his girls. I mean, Linda Thompson was there for 4 of the years, and they were very much in love. And he was quite faithful to her. So maybe at the end, he started slipping a little bit. And Sly Stallone talks about this. He says, I got the keys to the candy store. And it ruined his marriage. Maybe ruined a couple of relationships. It's a very treacherous place to walk. Which almost brings me to a segue that I think is going to turn you guys. I was in Memories Theater. That was a theater in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, right down the street from Dollywood, where Charlie Hodge and I worked for about a year and a half together, 2 years. And then I came back to Vegas because I missed Vegas. I had a beautiful home. I wanted to be there. That was a little rural for me. I tried to talk them into, we should be doing something with Nashville. Once a month, special from Pigeon Forge, Elvis Live, would have been great. Theater owners, no, we don't want to make any changes. We want everything just like it is. I'm not a good guy with everything just like it is. I like the growth. I like the excitement of something new, a new mountain to climb, a new song to sing. Something, come on. So I came home. During the day, there was nothing to do. Very, very quiet town. People drive there. It's like a Don Rickles joke. They drive there in the fall to see the leaves change color. It's Pigeon Forge and Gatlinburg. That's like the old joke. Yeah, it was so boring. We're sitting in the front watching the truck rust. You know what I mean? I mean, come on. But I started watching Christian television. I had grown up an Episcopalian altar boy, very straight-laced, until rock and roll hit me between the eyes. And then I can't speak for you guys, but most young men at 20 invent their own religion. I'm a nice guy. I'm not hurting anybody. God can't be mad at me. If I'm with a girl and she wants to be with me, where's the problem? You know, this is, I'm paying my taxes. I got a job. I'm not stealing stuff. But there's reasons that that's complicated. I'm watching these young preachers on Christian television, and I got infected. I admired their passion. I admired their dedication. And I thought, wow, these guys are really doing a wonderful thing. And I thought, if I can keep your attention, if I got enough charisma to hold your attention for an hour singing Don't Be Cruel, wouldn't it be better if I could give you the word of God? Yeah, it would. That'd be better for you and me. I still want, it's still nice to sing Don't Be Cruel. Nothing wrong with entertainment, movies, stories, whatever. But suddenly, I felt like I've already done this. I've done this. Nobody's going to get bigger at doing this. Nobody will ever do the TV parts I had. Nobody. Nobody's going to ever have Elvis say, I wonder if that's me. So you might say, the golden goose of that phenomena, I got to carry for a while. And in the last 10 years, my main thrust has been about participating in some sort of spiritual experience. I had a podcast for a little while called Coffee with the King, and you would think that's Elvis, but it wasn't. It was Coffee with Jesus, because when Elvis came out, there was a big sign, Elvis, you're the king. And he said, no, honey, I'm just a singer. Jesus is the king. And I was very touched by that. And there was a part of him that was obsessed with spirituality, another part of him that was obsessed with the pleasures that were falling to him. Very understandable. King Solomon, same thing. He had 600 wives. So I think he went to the party. You know what I mean? And he said at the end of his life, everything is nothing without God. It means nothing. It means nothing. I'm 80 and I'm looking and going, I got to go somewhere. Oh, every place I wanted to go, I kind of been. I lived in Hollywood. I had a 55 Cadillac convertible. I had diamond rings and jumpsuits. And come on, I lived the silliness of it. Now what? Well, it's touched and moved my heart to a point that even if I have a hit show, I'm going to come back and also have my podcast. I'm going to have that Coffee with the King thing. I'm going to do that again. And there's something that's come along that really has touched my heart, and be an interesting thing if you guys would do an episode on. I would be honored to help you with it or be a part with it. Have you ever heard of the Shroud of Turin?
Yeah.
It's the burial cloth of Jesus. And then a medieval artist painted it. And no, Go look at one from the last year. Scientists, the leading scientists of the world, have come in, and let's examine this. 40,000 tons of nuclear energy went through his body to imprint that on the cloth. How do we know it was Jesus? On his eyes, holding the lids down, was a coin from Pontius Pilate, issued in 27 AD. In the cloth is the stamp and the letter, the message from the centurion in charge of the execution, Yeshua the Nazarene, in Latin, Greek, and Aramaic. That was Jesus Christ. That's how he was murdered. So we know he existed from this. But what's thrilling is that print. The scientists now say he was wrapped in the shroud. He dematerialized, came through the shroud. He literally rose. Well, who had a hand in that? I think we know. Or if we don't know, you can certainly, I bet both of you, are you in the same room?
No. We're not even in the same state.
I bet both of you just kind of caught that. You know what I mean? It's exciting. He promised he would do it, and he did it. Nobody else in the history of mankind did that. We cannot make the imprint on the cloth like that. We don't have the way to do it. We either melt the cloth, it catch on fire. The imprint is, if you took a hair and cut it, you know, in half, that's how thin the imprint on the thing is. And it doesn't bleed into the next layer. It's printed there from a blast of nuclear energy. So that tells me he was here. He did what he promised. He rose from the grave. I want to hear what else he said. And if that gets into your skin, you will too. How will that change you? Well, if you're an electrician, you're still an electrician. If you're the mailman, you're still a mailman. But what he will do is bring the joy of what he had to teach and share. And his message is really, this isn't it. This is good. This is part of it. Might be step one. What's the next step? He suggests what it is and says, listen to what I'm telling you. Because he said, I'm not here to say what I have to say. I'm here to say what my Father has to say. And it's a way to live and a way to appreciate the gift of life and know we're going on. And really, all he really asked for is that we are kind to each other. Two commandments he has. Love God, which you can't help but love God. Tomorrow when you walk out in the sunshine, you're going to love God. Wow, what a nice day. Yep, I did that. Thank you, God. The other one is be nice to each other. Love your neighbors yourself. That's it. You do that, and you got all the commandments. That's pretty easy. I feel like God created all of this. It's amazing. And he's given us the means with which to develop it and share it. That's it. That's life. Thank you, God, for being here, for the journey. And yeah, let me be kind to this guy. Let me help this guy. Let me hold the door for this lady. The guy's changing his tire. Hey, you need any help over there? You got a good jack? I got a better jack thing. Want to use my jack? It's not hard to extend yourself like that, you know?
Yeah, it's not hard at all.
Nope. It isn't. No, Jesus on the Mount of Olives before, like a month before they put him down, he tells you that it's not going to happen. We're not going to work it out. We can try. And that will be good for our spirits and our souls. That will help us progress to the next step in the right manner. But he tells us it's going to fall apart. There's going to be wars, rumors of war, be famine. There are going to be people deceiving each other. There are going to be people cheating, lying. We're equipped to, but it's very difficult to resist the temptation of this life. And he tries to empower us with that. And I have a very silly kind of thought or a concept, you might say, and that is, I'm like me. and you guys are Reese like you. I'm so sorry. Casey, I don't know your name, sir.
Oh, I'm Ray.
Ray, Casey and Ray. Okay. You guys are different. You got your own little drum beat and your own tempo. Now, you're going to go through this life trying to develop that and resist the things you know that are wrong. Now, it's tempting, but...
I don't know about that.
Well, hopefully you will. Hopefully you will. Go see the crowd and see if you... It doesn't make you less of a man. In some ways, it might make you more of a man. You know what I mean? Anything you think is good is still good. What happens with the presence of evil or Satan is he distorts it. Love shared between a man and a woman is as beautiful as it gets. When you start sharing it with too many, you're diluting it, and very rarely do those relationships wind up amicable. And when you are finally with the person you're supposed to be with, is it been a little diluted? Are you bringing half of what you could? And it's still good. You know what I mean? I'm not saying, you know, but, and you can find a satisfaction within it, because if you bring your concerns to your spiritual walk, we are promised that our sins are forgiven. All he said is, go and sin no more. Now, what is sin? Sin isn't you're a dirty, filthy bastard. Pardon my French. No, it's missing the mark. I throw a dart at the target. It doesn't hit the bullseye. It goes off. It misses. That's a sin. When you miss the mark, you're off a little. Sin has been made to me. No, the commandments are, thou shalt, don't do this. No, they were loving. The Jews and the Hebrews are saying it's a loving word of God. Look, this is what I want you to do. Ray, don't walk in the street on the way home from school, okay? Be careful, because a car's coming, you can get hit. That's a commandment. Don't walk in the street. It wasn't, thou shalt not walk in the street. Don't walk in the street. It wasn't like that. So, and you're a sinner. You know what repent means? You know what? I should stop taking heroin. I'm killing myself. It's bad for me. I know it feels good, great high. I used to do cocaine in my 40s. I couldn't stand the next day. I couldn't stand the down. I can't stand the hangover from a serious drunk. I can't trade today for last night's pleasure. That's a bad payoff. One drink didn't kill me. Heroin's a different thing. I'll kill you. But I mean, you know, one drink doesn't kill you. Jesus drank with his boys. But to be a drunk, it's not a sin to have a drink. It's a sin to be a drunk. You know what I mean? And it's like, God doesn't want you to not enjoy anything. He wants you to enjoy it all. And we're taught, when you start having thoughts that you're, I don't know if I should do that, then you shouldn't. But then change what you're thinking about. You know, change thinking about it. I mean, you know, you see a woman who's dressed provocatively, and she's gorgeous. You learn to think, well, she's doing a good job. She's beautiful. I got a wife. I got kids. Whatever. What was it doing here today? Oh, we came here for lunch. Okay. You can get off it. You got to train yourself to do it. Not necessarily easy, but it's worth the effort. And what I want to do now is back out of this, so I don't feel like I'm pushing you guys. What I wanted to do is expose you to the shroud.
What's up, everybody? I'm Matt, the host of the Beard Laws Podcast, a podcast that has nothing to do with beards, a podcast where we aim to entertain and interact with our live viewers, but our listeners. They're like the quiet person that never talks sitting around the bonfire, because the rest of the group is so entertaining, hilarious, wild, and a little bit dumb. So grab a drink, grab a snack, and let Beard Laws and the boys, Toby, Brandon, Logan, Zach, Richie, and our occasional special guest entertain you. We're live on the Beard Laws YouTube Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and for every reason you want to see us and or our beards, check us out, thebeardlawspodcast.com. We're everywhere.
I don't want to over-preach to you. I want to share the shroud with you, because I'm going to do that. I have a painting. I should show you the painting as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll pop it up in the screen. So do you Do you preach anywhere? Like, is this a thing that you do?
What I was just doing. That's about as far as I go. You know what I mean?
On your podcast?
A little bit. And it's like, I'm like a sermon thief. If I hear something really good, I want to share it with you. Because it's not their word. It's the word of God. You know what I mean? So they copyright an idea about God. Are you crazy? You can't do that. But I want to be what they would call an encourager. But I don't want to. They asked George Clooney if he would ever consider running for a political office. And he laughed and said, I got too many skeletons in my closet. Me too. I don't have so many skeletons. I can't tell you about the shroud. That's a good thing. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So I'm going to put up a website. What I'm going to do is I did a painting of the face of Jesus, like the shroud, kind of dark and like the shroud. And I'm going to have a couple of t-shirts that I wear. I'm going to put up a website about the shroud. And when people say, oh, I know what that is, I say, yes, it is. And I'll hand them a card that will direct them to the website. And the website will tell them about the shroud. And on the website, I will say to them, I don't in any way want to preach to you. I just want to share with you the inspiration of what this blessed man came and did for us. I do suggest one thing, that you go read what he had to say. He promised he would do this, and he did it. And it's the most miraculous thing a man has ever done. I think he was divine, and I think you will too. God bless you. Go check it out. So I want to get off it. Like, we're right at the place now where you guys have been so kind to listen to my expounding, if you will, but I don't want to beat you with it. I want to share it with you. And then I almost want to say, laugh at it. Now let's go have a drink. Or Elvis used to say, let's pass the plate and go get some coffee. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, this was awesome, man. That you're welcome back anytime, man. I'm sure that I'm sure you have a ton of more stories to share. We don't want you to get in trouble with your wife. We know it's late. Please tell everyone where they can find you, website, all that stuff.
Well, my website is thepetewilcoxshow.com. And it kind of gets up to date. I'll have another website that I'm going to put up. You guys are so special and kind to do this with me. If nothing else, when I get the website up, I'll holler. Because I got your number now. You're in trouble.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. Where are you in Florida? Because I'm in Tallahassee. How close are we?
Oh, bless your heart. I'm in Ocala. Okay. That's funny. I don't have any reason to go to town, but I have no reason not to go. Actually, what we're going to do, we'll probably get after the theaters in Florida. We have a couple down here that we're going to do, and we'll film the show, and then we'll send them, because little theaters are really where I need to be.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, there's a small theater right up the road here. You're pretty close to me. You're only less than 3 hours, so
you're up north. I remember when we came from Texas, you take 10 to Tallahassee and turn right. You know, I think it was 75 or something, you know what I mean?
Yep. 75 to 10, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome, man. This was fun, man. You're welcome back anytime, Pete.
Well, you're so kind. It's really an honor to have people that are trying to reach out and communicate and share their time and their platform. I'm very honored that you shared this, that we shared this time together. I really am. And to you, hey. And I'm sorry.
Hey, before you go anywhere, I know you know what Elvis's favorite song was, Mom's favorite song was. I want to know what your favorite Elvis song is.
Oh, I would say there's two. It's kind of a toss-up.
See, I have two also.
Do you?
Yeah.
And what's funny is my favorite Elvis is the 50s Elvis, just because it was the golden poetry and I was there. I felt the change in humanity with him. But songs like to touch me the most kind of come out of the 70s, and there's two. One is I love what he did with Poke Salad Annie. That knocks me out. He did a great job with that. Kind of proved I can still rock and roll, you know. You know, he kind of proved that. And I love I Just Can't Help Believing. It was a song by BJ Thomas, and it's the theme song. He had a wonderful documentary called That's the Way It Is. And it was kind of the theme song. It showed him working on it with the guys and then on stage. But it's just a beautiful romantic moment with Elvis and his lady, whoever she may have been. And I find it very touching. And yet, honest to God, tomorrow afternoon I'll hear some, oh, man, look, Kentucky Rain. Kentucky Rain.
That's the hard part. But I like Hard-Headed Woman and I Can't Help Falling in Love with You are my two favorites.
The movie version, I Can't Help Falling, yeah. Or do you like the concert version?
No, I like the movie version.
Yeah, it's very pretty.
Yeah.
Hard-headed woman, soft on a man. Better cause the trouble ever since the world began. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, ever since the world began. I want to hear that.
Vocals are amazing. The guitar solo is amazing. And all the backing vocals in that song are just fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that song.
All Shook Up is a Bad Boy.
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
I like the way he growled. You know, we didn't hear a white man growl in songs until Hound Dog, Jailhouse Rock, the Edge, just the way he would grind on a note that was very passionate. It was very exciting. It's funny. He said, I'm not the king. Elvis, Jesus is the king. I said, well, all right, let's split some hairs. Jesus is the king of kings. You can be the king of rock and roll.
Yeah, we got a king of rock and roll. Yeah.
It's okay. You can be king of rock and roll, Elvis. I'm sorry. Can't nobody touch you and that bling and that hair. Dear God, that hair. Wait, look. Come on, man. Ain't nobody like Elvis.
Well, you got the eyes, you got the sneer, you got everything about Elvis. He's perfect. Wow. Like I was telling Casey too, like a lot of people can do the Elvis impersonation, but nobody can actually be Elvis, which is
you're absolutely right.
It's amazing.
And I've seen one guy have a better look. He had better hair. This guy looks better in suits. He's thin. Elvis, it's funny, Elvis, my wife was in here, she'd kill me. He looked amazing in clothes. But when he took his shirt off, it looked like he never did a push-up in his whole life. What the hell? You know what I mean? Come on, Elvis, you could have at least matched Clint Eastwood here, for God's sakes.
Yeah, for fuck's sake, you were in the Army. What did you do in the Army? No push-ups?
You're doing racquetball, you're doing karate, but you haven't done a push-up. I don't know. I mean, he did, but it's kind of...
What are your thoughts on the while we're talking about Elvis a little more? What are your thoughts on the latest movie with Austin Butler? What did you think of that one?
Oh, I thought he did a fantastic job. I you know, it almost sounds patronizing to say I was so proud of him, but as an artist, and we're all artists in our way, you're communication artists. I have to really be proud of it. It was an amazing undertaking. He didn't look indulgent. Didn't look like he was acting. I thought he did a fantastic job. I questioned the director on a couple of choices, but it was very pretty. It was a very intriguing film to look at. But why did he make Tom Hanks have that ridiculous Austrian accent? Colonel Parker didn't sound like that. Colonel Parker was trying to sound American. He didn't want to bring attention to the fact that he was, you know. So that was what they call in acting, that's indicating. You're playing to the audience. You're letting them, you know, the audience is smarter than that. That's not the way Colonel Parker sounded. But Hanks did a great job in the character. Right. You know what I mean? I hated his guts. So, you know what I mean? He did a wonderful job. Yeah, he did.
Did you ever cross paths with the Colonel?
I never did. But you're making me think, I got to tell you a funny story about my wife. We met 40 years ago now, 40 years ago, I was in a show at the Silver Bird Hotel, and I had, might have been one of the best shows I ever did in my life. I came out, and I would do some impressions Sit in the Fly would do Dean Martin. I'd do an original song. I would do Song of the Day. Then a named comic would come out and do 10 or 15 minutes. Then I would come back as Elvis. And the girls, the horn, the whole thing. It was just, I'm glad I got to do that. I don't want to do it anymore, but I'm glad I got to do it. Well, one night, she was sitting dead center, front row. And I gave her a copy of my record. And later on, we had coffee and salad, whatever. It's so funny. She came to see me a couple of times, and this is so intimate, and yet that's who I am. We smooched. We smooched a lot. We never did anything but smooching. She had a little boy that was a year and a half old. I have a son that I had lost through a divorce, and I knew I couldn't give her what she needed. I couldn't give her the husband or the father to her son she needed, so we backed away. We didn't see each other for actually about 20 years, and then we didn't see each other for another 10. We met, we got together online. It was so, online, she said to me, "You don't remember me, do you?" And I said, "Well, help me." I didn't, because I had blocked her out, because I couldn't have her. Then I don't want to think about her. I my career was just opening. I couldn't be the dad to that little boy. No. Okay. She said, "Well, I came to see you." And one time she said, "I remember I came to see you at a Mexican restaurant, and you were standing on a table, a couple of margaritas in, singing a Pat Benatar song, Hit Me With Your Best Shot." And you grabbed a handful of Doritos and threw them at me. I said, "Oh my God." I said, "I remember that. I remember your smile." And I told a friend about it. And my friend said, "I was there that night. I remember when you did that." And okay. Then we got together. Well, we've been married 5. So we got together 6 years ago. And we're a 24/7 couple. She said, "Well, my little boy," I had another one, "my little boys are 42 and 38, and my grandchildren are 12, 13, and 15. I said, "Well, I hate to tell you something, but your grandma job is over. They are now into their phones and their friends." And she says, "You're right." I said, "Well, what else is going on in your life?" She said, "Well, nothing really." I said, "Well, you want to be my girlfriend?" And she said, I'll be your forever girlfriend." I said, "Okay, that sounds right." And we have been together ever since. And it's just been
awesome.
Oh, it is. Unbelievable. Yeah. And her spiritual walk is as strong, if not stronger, than mine. So it's a lovely communication. And it's a blessing. It's a blessing that God has put in my life. We feel like it was meant to be. If it wasn't for the internet, we wouldn't have ever gotten in touch again. She would have been doing, she did her thing. Okay. But her Elvis story is to die for. 16 years old, her mom and dad take her to see Elvis. They're at the Hilton. She comes down to the front of the stage where all the girls are. And she stands up and she says, "He's singing Love Me Tender." She says, "Elvis, it's my birthday." He comes over, "Love Me True." She's looking at him. She puts her hand on his foot. "Love Me Tender." It starts going up his leg. "Love Me." It gets to his knees. "Where's my mic?" "Love Me Tender, Love Me True." He looks down at her and he says, "Watch it." Elvis told my wife to watch it. Her hand was on his knee. Come on. That's a better Elvis story than mine.
That is amazing.
Yeah, come on.
That's pretty cool.
And she winds up marrying America's TV Elvis. Yeah. Oh my
gosh. Very cool, Pete.
The threads of the tapestry of life are amazing, aren't they?
Oh yeah.
They really are. The people you meet, the reason you meet them, the journey we're taking. It's quite something.
Yeah. This has been awesome, man. Thank you.
Yeah, it has for me. I've just enjoyed it to death. I've got to remember I could text you. I have your phone number, so I can text you the picture of my dad and Elvis, my dad and Errol Flynn. I'll send you a couple, and you can play around whatever you want or whatever you think is fun.
Yeah, I'll pop them all up into the video.
And so. Guys, it's been really fun. Thank you so much for listening to me rant, and I hope I stirred that much curiosity in the shroud.
Yeah, I have a buddy that when we have you back on, I have a friend that will come on and he will talk about the shroud with you. He knows a lot about it. So as soon as you mentioned it, I thought of him. So,
oh, wonderful! Yeah. That would be great.
Absolutely,
it'll probably take me a while. I look at 2024. My friends and I are going to put our show together. I know in 2024 I'll put that website together. But, oh, I got to remember. I'll send you the picture that I drew of him. It's very dark, and it's pretty. But I want it on a black shirt, so it has a sombering, arresting effect. I want you to say to me, oh, I know what that is, because I want to give you a card and say, please, go see my website. And I'm not going to preach to somebody in Walmart. I'm not going to do that to them. But I'll hook them. Right. I'm deadly like that. I'll put a hook in them. guys, all right, this has really, really been great.
Nah, hey, thank you, brother.
Yeah, pleasure was all ours, Pete.
Good night and God bless you. And for those of you listening, good night and God bless you. For those of you listening, go see The Shroud on YouTube. A Shroud. Try to make it something from the last year, because that's where all the news is up to date. Since last year, they've made some of those amazing discoveries. Elvis,
thank you, brother.
Elvis is leaving the building.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
See you, man.